This is MSO Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. Mike, welcome back. How are you?
We're doing well, Rick. I mean, with the Celtics are playing at such a high level, it's hard to grasp how well they're doing. And not only that, you have to find the right adjectives to describe how great they're playing.
Well, it's going to be fun the next half hour or so to figure all of that stuff out. But I want to start, Mike. I don't want to throw a curveball at you, but I want to start with the Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Jaylen Brown.
Okay. All right. And you know what? That's a great place to start because yesterday, I think, against the Golden State Warriors, and we should remind people the Celtics won by, 52 points? And had an 82-38 lead at halftime. The Golden State Warriors strategy, and I guess it was Steve Kerr's game plan, was to leave Jaylen Brown unattended. And he felt disrespected. And sure enough, he responded with, 19 points in the first quarter. They sagged off of him. Why, I don't know. But it was a plan that was completely unfathomable. And Jaylen Brown and the Celtics took advantage of it. Jaylen Brown was able to shoot outside shots at will, no one near him. And he also gave him room to penetrate and finish off the drives or kick off to teammates. It was just an absurdly crazy strategy by the Golden State Warriors. But the Celtics right now are all about teamwork and winning, and they don't care which Golden State defense, what they implemented, because it was just a crazy strategy. It played into the Celtics' hands.
Reading his comments after the game, it's funny, in the Globe, it started with him saying that we respect the league and we have to play as hard as we can against everybody. That's how we respect our opponent. And then later on, you know, I saw the quote. I don't know in the interview where it came first or how the Globe moved it. But then in the interview, he said, you know, I felt a little disrespectful, he said. And I do like that comment coming from him, because he's not saying we're rubbing your face in it. We're saying, look, you're the opponent. We've got to play as hard as we can and expect your best.
Exactly. And you know what? Going back one game earlier when they destroyed the Dallas Mavericks, and Kyrie Irving was booed relentlessly, you know, by the Boston Garden fans, and Jaylen Brown was asked about it in the post game, and he said, that's fine, you know, you can boo Kyrie Irving, but I hope that they also boo Jokic and they boo all the great players who come in here, because it only helps the Celtics in terms of feeling that fan support.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to be universal about it and have the fans, you know, do it with a little bit of decorum, however. Let your feelings be known about opposing players throughout the game. You know, it's just, you have a home crowd advantage for a reason. I think he was trying to basically say, let's play up that home court advantage. So I love that, because Joe Mazzulla wants the team to play 82 games the way they've been playing the last 11 games, 11 straight wins. And I think right now the team is so in tune that they would want to do that through game 82.
I think before we dissect the most recent game and other stuff,
yeah,
want to go back to that Dallas game, because Doncic was nuts. He was crazy. I mean, it's just insane how he can play. But the Celtics were a team, and they, you know, the Mavs were sort of reduced to the one man show.
Well, yeah, and I'd say this, Rick. I mean, watch they compare the Doncic statistics with the Tatum statistics from that game, and Tatum's statistics, he was a plus whatever 30 or whatever when he was on the floor. And the Doncic statistics were like a minus 28 or whatever. And even though Doncic, here's the thing that people forget, I think, when they look at the NBA superstars, I want to underscore this point because I feel strongly about it, because I feel strongly about defense, okay? And against the Mavericks, Kyrie Irving and Doncic were by far the weakest players on the court. I mean, the Celtics could get anything they wanted against Doncic and Kyrie Irving.
Right.
Okay? Whereas Tatum and Brown and Porzingis, and certainly Drew Holiday, the whole crew, they play defense for 48 minutes, okay? And I think the Mavericks sometimes are considered not quite an elite team, but a real good team that could cause some problems in the playoffs. But I say to everybody, no, they will not, because they are such a weak defensive team. And Kyrie Irving and Doncic set the tone, because they do not make much effort on defense.
Great point.
Even though they score a lot of points, Rick,
you
can score 28. But if you're giving up 26 at the other end, you're a plus two. You know, so in other words, like, they are such weak defensive players, and they set the tone for that entire team, that entire franchise. And I don't think it's a good tone. And it's reflected in their record and the fact that they don't ever go too far in the playoffs. So you don't win with players like that, even though they're superstar names. I personally don't consider them superstars because I consider them one-way players.
Okay. All right. I like that. I like that description. I want to mention again, I don't think it can be said enough. Back in the day when the Celtics were winning championship after championship, back in the, you know, the dark ages of the 60s and 70s, there wasn't any individual player on the team who led statistically across the NBA. There was no Russell, Cousy, no matter who it was, Havlicek, they were not the leader in whatever statistical category you want to come up with. But team-wise, they just won championships. Now, I'm looking at this team, and of course, it starts with Jason Tatum.
Yes.
He is not at the top of the leaderboard in any single category.
That's right.
But he is making everybody on that team play better.
No doubt about it, and I think that's reflected in the fact, like you said, he's not among the league leaders in statistics. I think he's averaging 27.2. And Jaylen Brown is next when the Celtics is like 22. And then Porzingis is around 20.4. And yet, even though he's, quote, only averaging 27.2, he's kind of a leader in the discussion now for the MVP. And he's up there with Jokic right now and Giannis as the top MVP candidates. I think the people on a national level are recognizing how much impact that he has on the other four players on the court. And they're recognizing the fact that it's because Tatum is playing so efficiently and distributing the ball as well as scoring that all of a sudden he's climbing up the ladder of the MVP vote. Now, personally, Rick, do you and I care if he gets the MVP? It'd be nice if he got it, but it's a lot nicer if they win the championship in June and let's say they play a great Denver team. And we should point out something here. The other night, speaking of Denver, the reigning champion, they go into Los Angeles, and LeBron James picks up as the first man. He's already got his number one scoring leader. He exceeded Kareem Abdul-Jabbar a year or so ago, and he picked up his 40,000 point. It's a milestone, okay, 40,000 points. No one has done that in the history of the NBA, and they stopped the game, and they practically had a parade on the court for LeBron James. And after the game, I saw pictures of him holding up his finger, number four and number zero, and a big smile on his face. But yet, when I look at the scoreboard, the Denver Nuggets won that game by 10 points. And isn't that the object of the game?
Yep.
The Denver Nuggets could have cared less if he gets to 50,000 points. The Denver Nuggets won the game, and they move on with one of the best records in the NBA, and the Lakers are still in fifth or sixth place in the Western Conference. So my point is this. Winning is far more important than individual accolades, and LeBron seems to have lost his grasp on that because he's just, it's all about himself. I'm sorry to say it, as great a player as he's been, there's no denying his talent, there's no denying his impact. He's won a few championships, but it seems to become all individual now with him, whereas the Denver Nuggets go on the enemy court in L.A., they beat him by 10, and like they have, you know, they're right there at the very top of the Western Conference standings. And basically, along with the Celtics, they're the teams to beat in the playoffs.
Well, I think Tatum has learned the lesson. I hope. I hope it's real. It seems genuine. He's picked up the Celtic mentality of how, you know, you win 17 or 18 championships.
Right.
I want to get back to Jaylen Brown with one thought in a minute. But what's your reaction, getting off subject for a minute, to Bronny James thinking he may go into the draft this year?
No.
What team wants him?
Exactly. You know, the funny thing is, because of his name, I have watched several USC games this year, maybe as many as 10. And they always start at 10 or 11 p.m. Eastern time. He's not even in the top. First of all, he doesn't start. And not only that, he's the 7th or 8th best player on a USC team that currently is 12-17.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging 5.5 points a game. He's shooting it at 36% overall, 27% on threes, 61% at the foul line. And you can name 40 or 50 teams that are better than USC, and all five of their starters are better than Bronny James.
Mm.
So Bronny James is he's not even close to an NBA prospect. And I know that, I guess ESPN is now saying, let's look at the 2025 draft instead of the 2024 draft, because this kid is not ready. I mean, obviously, you have to cut him some slack. He did have a cardiac arrest during the summertime. And then he had to get himself in shape and be cleared by the medical authorities at USC. But in terms of his impact with USC, he's a bit player. In other words, he sort of plays a Luke Kornet type of role. Mm-hmm. You know, he just comes in, he gives them a few minutes each half, but he literally has little or no impact on each game. I mean, his biggest game that I've seen this year is like 8 points, okay? And so he really has had, there's no business talking about him being an NBA prospect in April or when the draft happens here, because he's not in the discussion, really.
Okay. I want to go back to Jaylen Brown. And
sure.
I love what he's doing now. He doesn't seem to be turning the ball over as much as he used to when he drives to the basket, and boy, can he drive to the basket. But watching that fall away jumper scares the bejeebers out of me, and it is a thing of beauty.
Yeah, he's become, I think, one of his biggest improvements this year is that, you know, that 2-point shot.
Yes.
Where he goes into the lane, he can spin, he hits the foul line jumpers, he hits to the top of the key, the baseline stuff. You know, the players obviously are happy with the 3-pointers these days. The Celtics hit a bunch of them yesterday against the Warriors. But the great 2-point shooters seem to be few and far between. I think of DeMar DeRozan, the Chicago Bulls, terrific 2-point shooter. But Jaylen Brown is getting into that category where he can fake the three. And these players now, when they fake the three, the defense buys into it. They bite on that fake. And it allows a guy like Jaylen Brown to go in and take like that 14 or 15-foot jumper. And he seems to take it off the wrong foot even.
Yes.
But he's practiced it so much that for him, it's a comfortable shot. So he's making a high percentage of those 2-point baskets. So, yeah, that's just another dimension to the Celtics offense, which can be used. And, you know, it was great. Another great thing about them beating the Warriors by 52 yesterday is the fact that Porzingis was in street clothes.
Yeah.
You know, and the Warriors had won like 8 of their previous 10, 11 of their last 13. I kind of was fearing yesterday's game. And then all of a sudden, the Patriots, they haven't been out playing anymore. but the Celtics went on like a 31-3 run or whatever it was to put it away in the first half. So it was a crazy game. And I got to say this, though, Rick, in terms of sustaining a winning streak, during this 11-game winning streak, they've been averaging the wins by 22 points a game. That's like unheard of, to have an 11-game winning streak with an average margin of victory at 22 points per game. And overall, Rick, for the 60 games or so they played this year, their average winning margin is 10.4 or 10.5, which is the sixth largest margin in league history.
Mm.
We're talking about the 76-77 year history of the NBA. They have the sixth winningest margin of victory ever. So that shows you how dominant they've been, and it also indicates that hopefully they're in it for the long run here and try to sustain that through the rest of the regular season and then into the playoffs, because they certainly have dominated. They played a dominating brand of basketball. That's the bottom line.
What's nice, too, is they're winning in different ways. They have made the adjustments. I read in the Globe when Mazzulla referred to that first Golden State loss back in December.
Yes.
And the Globe writers, the sports writers, were upset that he wasn't upset. And come to find out what he was saying, and I read the quote several times, other players on the Celtics mentioned it, they can't guard us, meaning Golden State. They can't guard us.
Right.
At the way they're playing, can anybody guard them? Because it looks to me like you've got 7 or 8 guys who can score in 2 or 3 different ways.
Right, right. And when you look at their scoring balance, Rick, I think it goes with, like I said, you have Tatum at the top, you have Jaylen Brown, you have Porzingis, all averaging 20 points or better. And then you have Derek White, who, again, we don't seem to talk enough about Derek White, Rick, because he's just there. He's averaging 15.5 points a game. That's, you know, we talked about Malcolm Brogdon and what he meant to the Celtics the previous couple of years. But Derek White's taken it one step higher, I think, because if one of the other guys is not having a good 3-point shooting night, Derek White's 3-point shooting has improved so much that he's a legitimate threat out there. And he's also great going into the lane. And we talked about Jaylen Brown hitting the 2-pointers. As we know, Derek White has that little floater where he goes into the lane.
Oh, yeah.
Moving towards the basket, and he has to release the ball before the defense comes over to block the shot. And he's really an expert at that little floater. So he's averaging 15.5. And then you have Drew Holiday, who quietly is averaging around 12 or 13 points a game while playing exemplary defense. He, to me, is the defensive leader of that team.
You know, I want to go back to what you just said in reference to Marcus Smart and and Brogdon, because I was upset when they both left, of course.
Right.
But these two guys have come in, and as much as I love Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon, they're better.
Well, they're right. And also, too, and I guess the reason we can't talk about Marcus Smart and Brogdon too much is, unfortunately, both have been injured for much of the season. So,
and so is Robert Williams.
Correct. So it's too bad for those teams that acquired those players, because they are very good players. But it's unfortunate this has been their year for injuries. So, but even on face value, even if Brogdon and Marcus Smart were playing efficiently for their respective teams, I think on paper the Celtics love the fact of having Drew Holiday and Porzingis for the stretch run here and the upcoming playoffs. So, yeah, it right now things couldn't be any better. And as I mentioned just before we went on air, you kind of wish the playoffs start this coming Thursday or something, because no one could be touching the Celtics right now, you know. It's funny, Rick, when I look at the standings, the one team that's been playing well in the Eastern Conference, of course, Milwaukee has improved under Doc Rivers. They've improved their defensive rating, and that's exactly what they want to do. And right now they're in second place in the East. But the Miami Heat, they don't scare me yet, but it's a concern because they've won 8 of their last 10. They made a couple of roster changes before the trade deadline, and Tyler Hero is hurt again, but he's going to come back. And they're in, like, they're lingering in fifth or sixth place, and you say, "Oh, they're not a threat." Well, I think they will be a threat come playoff time. So I'm a little concerned about them. But in the Eastern Conference, I really think the Celtics are miles ahead right now of, like, Cleveland, which had a hot streak, the Knicks, who have fallen off, and Jalen Brunson got hurt yesterday, their lead player. And good teams, but I don't know how much they can push the Celtics in the playoffs, whereas the Miami Heat could take them to 6 or 7 games, but I would think the Celtics, certainly with a superior team this year, could take them out and go on to the finals. So,
well, I think,
to be seen, but, you know.
I think another positive for the Celtics is that Mazzulla's coaching is definitely better. And I'm going to go with Sam Cassell. I don't know any better, but I just instinctively think he's helping. And the bench play, so they're managing the minutes, I think, spectacularly well. So we talked about before we started recording, are they peaking too early? And I think not, because of the fact that the minutes are being handled. You know, Porzingis is getting his injury rest. Tatum gets a blow when he needs it, although he doesn't take it very often. Brown has sat down. The other guys, their minutes are being managed. And saying that, it seems to me that Peyton Pritchard has elevated his game a notch, and he gives him, I think, spectacular energy off the bench. And Sam Hauser is just kind of like Mr. Efficiency.
Yeah, I agree. Both of those guys have played so well. What I like, Ricky, and I'm glad you mentioned both of those guys, Peyton Pritchard and Hauser, because what I think is that early in the season, both of them were struggling a little bit, and you wondered how good they would be for 82 games. But Hauser and Pritchard have both come on, so that Mazzulla doesn't have to. When the Celtics have an 18 or 20 point lead, and they want to rest Tatum for 8 or 9 or 10 minutes, or Jaylen Brown, I think they've been games where Pritchard has given him 26, 27 minutes, like he did yesterday against the Warriors, scored 19 points, and Hauser can get you 4 or 5 3-pointers in a game, and that keeps them on the floor, and it enables Mazzulla to rest the key guys for an extra minute or two. And sometimes that's all they need, so if the game gets close again. So, and plus we should mention Luke Kornet, who has given them some really good minutes throughout the season, and now this the unknown, Rick, is this Xavier Tillman, the guy they acquired from the Memphis Grizzlies, who gave the Celtics some good minutes yesterday. He's like a wide-body, 6'7", 6'8", strong rebounder who's not afraid to mix it up underneath. I think that will be very helpful in the playoffs because, as you know, it gets more physical in the playoffs. And if a Tillman can play 5 minutes each half and bang people around underneath and get a few rebounds, that's all good for the Celtics, I believe.
Do you see any signs of fatigue in Al Horford?
Not at all. I think when you talk about managing minutes, Rick, I think you made a great point there. I think Mazzulla has been able to manage Horford's minutes much better because the Celtics have had so many blowout wins, and Horford hasn't had to, you know, exert that much energy or physical play because, you know, the Celtics have been winning by a huge margin. But I think he's been playing great. I think he's been shooting well. I see him block shots. For an old guy, he still has some mileage left. And that's great to see, because I wondered how he would do this year, being a year older. Because sometimes we see players, Rick, lose it overnight from 1 year to the next.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I haven't seen that with Al Horford. I mean, I saw Chris Paul play yesterday, and I know he makes big money, comes off the bench for Golden State, but he's been injured for part of the season. He did nothing yesterday. He hasn't done anything in the games that he's played. Certain players who have gotten to be older just aren't nearly as good as they were a year or two ago. Golden State might be a case in point. I mean, Klay Thompson has gone from being a starter to being a bench guy. Sometimes he's good off the bench, and sometimes he's terrible. And he's up 34, 35 years old. Steph Curry, how bad did he look yesterday, going 0-for-9 on three-pointers?
Yeah.
And I know he's in the 33, 34 years. He could turn around tomorrow and score 48. However, being older, he can't be as consistent as he was even 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned falling off the cliff, and two baseball guys come to mind, Kevin Youkilis and Mike Greenwell. I remember Greenwell was only in his early 30s, and he was playing great baseball one day, and the next day he couldn't. It was just amazing to see that difference in the physical fall off, you know?
Right,
And I think people have to remember, or I think I have to remember, that these guys are, first of all, they're freaks, and I mean that with respect.
Right,
they're physical freaks. They're fantastic athletes.
Yep.
They take care of themselves, and they are competing, even though they're playing, they're competing at such a tremendously high level against one another physically.
Right.
And then you've got the mental aspect of the travel and how these guys' egos fit in and all this other stuff. So as much as I like to knock these millionaires and make fun of them, you know, it can be stressful, and it can take its toll. But I think what impresses me probably the most about this team, and I don't know if I'm exaggerating here, but the fact, Mike, that they've won so many games against competitive teams missing one or two or even more of their starters.
Right, right. And you can't say that about other teams. That's why I think the Celtics have the best shot at winning it all, because they're deep. I mean, they're a deep team, and Mizzou has had that luxury of being able to rest Horford when they play back-to-back games. And sometimes Tatum doesn't have to go as hard. And although, like you mentioned, he doesn't like to come out of the lineup. He loves to play. So, but I think coming down the stretch, if they have a huge lead, again, Missoula may have that pleasant problem of deciding, you know, should we let Jaylen Brown sit for a game or two? Should we let Tatum sit for a game or two? We'll see what happens 10 or 15 games from now. But it looks like certainly the Celtics are going to wrap up the best record in the Eastern Conference fielding. So, Rick, should we end up with a Power Five?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. So, we're going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks, the number five spot, because they're starting to play well again under Doc Rivers. They've won 7 of the last 10. They've improved on defense. Giannis is having a great year. So they've kind of gotten back into the picture. There's no way they're going to catch the Celtics, but they are playing better lately, and I'm sure they're just trying to gear up for the playoffs. So, they're the number five spot. Now, you go to the Western Conference, and you could put Oklahoma City, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Denver Nuggets all in the same basket. I mean, they're within a half a game of each other. So I guess we have to put Denver's half a game behind Oklahoma City. So they're going to go in the number four spot, but I love the way they're playing. Denver, like the Celtics, seems to play great against the good teams, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
That is the mark of a great team, obviously. And they're the reigning champions, and until someone knocks them off, you got to respect what they do. I love Jokic's game, as you know. So I got to put them at the number four spot only because Oklahoma City has a slightly better record. So we'll put Minnesota at the number three spot, or the co-number three spot with the Denver Nuggets. You have to go with OKC at number two with a 42-18 record. They're so consistent, and hardly anyone in the country knows who plays for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how good they are. And, of course, the Celtics far and away the number one team. But when it comes down to the playoffs, I think OKC, they might be a year or two away because they're so young. They might not, you know, last against the great competition in this year's playoffs, but they're certainly going to be a factor over the next couple of years. But I think between Minnesota and Denver, that would be a great Western Conference final. And then, of course, the Celtics, if they emerge, would have a really worthy opponent there, whether it be Minnesota or Denver. But I see, you know, thinking ahead for a month and a half here, I think Denver returns to the finals. That's the way I look at it. But Power Five right now, that's the way I see it, you know?
Okay, and again, the the Celtics are a fun team to watch right now.
Oh, yeah.
I was amazed, and I don't want to keep it, but I was amazed. The last two or three games, it seemed like when they had the ball on offense, the ball never even touched the floor. I mean, they're just passing out of their minds.
That's right. Brad Stevens must be beaming. They show a picture of me. I know, seeing him on a TV screen yesterday. It's hard to suppress a huge smile because he's got to be enjoying the heck out of this. He put this roster together. I know the owner, Rick Grosbeck, is really happy with the way this team is playing and the way that the roster was put together. So, and the guys seem to really get along, Rick. The chemistry that we sometimes mention that is so important to a team, meaning the locker room chemistry and all that, it seems to be really, really outstanding in that Celtics locker room.
All right, finally, Mike, thoughts either on high school basketball locally or college basketball across the spectrum?
Well, we got to mention Caitlin Clark, right? Watched her yesterday. She surpassed Pete Maravich. Like I said, it's like apples and oranges. Statistically, she surpassed Pete Maravich as the greatest all-time scorer in NCAA basketball. But the women's game is different than the men's game. I think Caitlin Clark is by far the greatest women's player I've ever seen, and she's done it under pressure the last couple of years. Teams want to keep her out of the scoring column. They whack her around. So you really have to applaud everything she's done for the University of Iowa. She can't take it any further, so I'm glad she's going to the WNBA next year. The high school game, well, we're in the midst of, I love watching the Division I tournament. My own nephew plays for Central Catholic, a 6'10" kid, John Kelly. They're playing Lawrence High tonight in the round of 16. If they win, they go to the final eight. We know that the former Central Catholic coach, the former Danvers coach, John Walsh, has a powerhouse in Malvern Catholic. They've won the state championship the last couple of years, and they won their opening game by like 45 points. So, you know, there's a lot going on with the high school tournament. It's always a great time of year, and it's just fantastic to watch, whether it's the boys' tournament or the girls' tournament.
Where's the game tonight?
At Central, it'll be sold out.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, there's Lawrence High kid by the name of Obi. Oh, my God, his last name escapes me right now. He is going to MIT on an academic scholarship. Comes from a really rugged background right here in Lawrence. But in fourth grade, Rick, he was taking high school courses.
Wow. Oh, my goodness gracious.
High school, he was taking college courses. He's got a full scholarship offer from MIT. And the Ivy League schools also want him badly. But I know for a fact he's going to MIT.
Good, good.
Phenomenal story. A high school kid from a tough family background who excels in the classroom and on the court. He's also first conference Merrimack Valley Conference All-Star. So it shows you how great he's been.
I hope he gets the support and guidance that he deserves.
Oh, yeah, he's getting it. He's a phenomenal story. He came up through the Lawrence Boys Club and has just taken advantage of the opportunities academically and basketball-wise. It's
great.
A phenomenal story. That's the type of story that should be on the national news.
Absolutely. Great story. And what about Matt Cross?
Matt Cross, 26 points in Saturday's game, doing great, a Beverly guy. UMass, Rick, you love UMass. They're 19-10, and wouldn't it be great if they emerged from the Atlantic 10 tournament and made the NCAA? They have a good all-around team. It's really a blue-collar team. But I love the way they play. They're a very lunch-pail brigade. They really play great team ball. It would be awesome to see them emerge from that tournament.
Amen to that. Let's hope. Yeah, go. I got my UMass sweatshirt on right now. That's our basketball insider, Mike Grenier, with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.